Welcome to Inside Texas on Texas Football Live Chat. Joining me today are Ian Boyd, X's and O's expert for the Longhorns and for Inside Texas, as well as Jerry Hamilton, a national recruiting analyst of On3 Sports, as well as recruiting reporter and analyst for Inside Texas as well. Big week for the Longhorns thus far. Not only are they in the second full week of practice, but also the Longhorns on the recruiting trail got a commitment from Cedric Baxter, the nation's number one running back out of Orlando's Edgewater. Jerry was there. I want to talk about that today, as well as some talk to Ian a little bit about some of the key opponents Texas is going to be seeing this year, some of the big-time players that he's talked about and been looking at as well. Jerry, first off, you also went by and saw a little quarterback yesterday out of New Orleans that some people might know about, Arch Manning. And then after that, you went and saw Derek Williams. You made the 10-hour trek overnight from Orlando after Baxter committed to New Orleans to catch a 6:30 a.m. practice of Arch Manning. And then you made a 3 o'clock in the afternoon practice of Derek Williams. That's a mouthful, bud. I think Ian and I are just sitting there looking at him going, wow, he did a lot.
I can tell you, I woke up in the hotel in Lafayette this morning and looked in the mirror. I said, that's that recruiting bender look and face I've been on before for many years. And the bloated face, you know, you're just like, you know. So it's, I'm across the state line. I'm back in the Houston area now. So it was an interesting 24 hours. It was a late notice that I was going to be able to take in the Arch Manning Isidore Newman practice. And then I knew, I gained the hour driving back. That was a big one, Bobby. I'll be honest, if I was working from west to east, it would have been a little more difficult. But the gaining that hour headed back to once you get past Tallahassee was big, driving overnight, slept at the rest stop. And, I pulled up the Isidore Newman. I don't know. I think it was like 5:50 in the morning, right about the time Coach Stewart did. And I think he was surprised I was there that early. But I was like, look, man, I slept in my car last night, so I'm going to be here early. I'm not missing this. But it was awesome to see Arch, Will Randall up to 235 pounds. I mean, he was in the low 220s this time last year, so he's starting to fill out. Arch looked awesome physically. I mean, you know, the main thing I noticed with him just from an athletic standpoint is he's gained the strength and the muscle mass, and he's retained all his athleticism. And that's one of the big keys moving forward for all these guys is how do you retain the athleticism as you stack that muscle and that weight on your frame? But Arch looked tremendous. I know we'll get into it. Conversation with Logan Kilgore, the new quarterback coach, OC, who he played junior college quarterback, then at Middle Tennessee State. He set passing records there. He played in the CFL. He's worked with David Morris at quarterback country for years. He was an assistant at Arkansas State under Butch Jones last year before taking this job for a year with Isidore Newman, and having the chance to work with Arch and really get him prepared to head off to Texas in January. But look, man, I mean, we'll be talking about it for all the Arch Manning's overrated talk. I got a suggestion for all those idiots. Okay, get your butt in a car and go to Isidore Newman and get into an in-depth conversation with Logan Kilgore and the staff there and actually watch something in person. And then I think you're the idiot type of opinions will change a little bit. The kid's not overrated. He's a tremendous talent, and he's an incredible leader, as I wrote about it Inside Texas this morning.
Yeah, and beyond that, you mentioned it. Go see him in person.
How about that?
It's not incumbent on – so here's what cracks me up about that. Oh, well, he didn't go to the Elite 11. He didn't do this. He doesn't want to compete. It's not incumbent on a high school kid to go to these camps, especially those camps are – created as marketing events at some level, right? It's not his job to market somebody else's event. It's not about competition at that level. Ian, I want to get to you real quick. Jai Hall on Thursday night gets arrested by the University of Texas Police Department. The initial read on that is we don't know exactly what's going to come of this. I would caution everybody, to be patient about how this plays out, because we don't know all aspects of Jai Hall's tenure at Texas. Oh, well, he only had this happen on a Thursday night. That may not be his first transgression. And to assume that it is, we'd be wrong. Likewise, it would be wrong to assume that he's had prior ones. And so that's what the coaching staff is there for, right? Is to decide those types of things. But Ian, I want to ask you is this. What does the loss of Ajai Hall potentially do to a Texas receiving core that, in my opinion, was looking very, had a lot of depth and a lot of firepower?
I think some of that depends. I mean, really the big question is, will Jordan Whittington be healthy this year? If Whittington is healthy, then you kind of have your top three pretty well set, and everybody else is going to be mostly rotating in. And then beyond that, how much positional flexibility does Jordan Whittington have? Can he play the Z? Who backs up Xavier Worthy? Who backs up Isaiah Nayor? You know, you lose one of those guys, maybe Worthy or Nayor slide to the other spot, and you elevate the next guy. Maybe that's Whittington. You can put Tariq Milton out on the field in the slot.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's really about depth outside, because there's only so many guys that have the sort of size and athleticism and ability to get down the field, in the world, certainly on this campus and on this roster. Ajai Hall, if he was going to offer something, it was going to be security and insurance outside.
Let me ask you this, though. So Ajai Hall, for whatever reason, is off the team, not something we can confirm, deny at this point. We simply don't know as reporters, and we're not going to go out that ledge saying that he's this or that. How much does the early returns that we're hearing on Savion Red and the late addition of Tariq Milton through the portal play into this for Texas if they do indeed lose someone the ability of Hall?
Well, I'd be curious to hear Jerry's opinion on Red and what he saw of him in high school. But Tariq Milton for sure is he played outside at Iowa State. His best year he played outside, but he was limited against top teams that had cornerbacks of a quality that he couldn't just run by because he's fast. So then they moved him inside to the slot. I think ideally he would be slot insurance and, just kind of a go run down the field every now and then, kind of a rotational player in the slot. If Whittington is hurt, if he needs a breather, what have you. If he has to be a solution outside because Nayor or Worthy, need a breather, something happens, I don't know how much that helps. And then I'd be curious to hear what Jerry has to say about Red.
Yeah, Jerry.
Yeah, on Ajai Hall, here was my take when he transferred to Texas, first off. What he brings to a program is the strikes fear in you athletic ability, right? Bobby can instantly beat man coverage and can scare a defensive coordinator with his ability to get over the top. And he's never been a consistent ball catcher or ball winner. I mean, even though he's got an unbelievable wingspan and catch radius, he's just always had, whether it's concentration issues, doesn't really get his hands up. He's always had issues with consistency catching a football. So when he transferred to Texas, my thing with him was he's just going to strike a little fear because the athlete he is at that height and that ability to win and get vertical instantly and what that does to help open up the field for other guys. So if he isn't on the field this year, I think that's what you miss with him. And he could go – he's a guy that catch 13 passes for 300 yards and score 5 touchdowns, and he does a lot more than that just because of how he scares you and what he can do to help other guys. So I don't think that's easily replaced. Like Savion Red, to me, he's not going to ever take the top off of defense. He's going to be a ball winner, especially in traffic. He's going to block. He is going to do all those things from a physical standpoint to win. And he's going to be a tremendous traffic player, I believe, and a guy that you can move around a lot. He's got a lot of football IQ about him and just that competitive fire a body type similar to Quan Cosby, I would say, for the Texas fans who haven't seen Red. That's kind of who he's built like, a little thicker in the lower body. But there aren't a lot of receivers that are built like running backs. So you kind of, it's hard to pick out a guy that for sure Savion Red looks like. Maybe Josh Reed from Rain at LSU way back in the day, who was a running back that transitioned to wide receiver that still had that running back body. So that's kind of what Savion Red is as a prospect. But I can tell you this, if the ball's in his area code, he is going to fight all three of us for the ball.
Jerry, Red, and I didn't even mention Brennan Thompson, who's more, and Eric likes to use the term vertical slot because he can get deep, right? You know, and I think that's a great, that's an apt term for it. You know, that's the guy that can beat you down the seam really badly, right? Or take an outside, like a bubble to the outside and really make something happen. I see what both of you guys are saying. Red's just, to Ian's point, what's the difference? Well, the difference is at the big time speed over the top. And so it does, it forces Texas to do some stuff. Jerry, I had another question for you.
On a Jai Hall, Joe just did hear that from Bianco that Texas will have a statement about Jai Hall later today. So we'll see what – we'll have a lot more information one way or the other pretty soon.
Yeah, good deal. Breaking news from Joe Cook of InsideTexas.com, the beat reporter for Inside Texas, revealing that information here live. You know, look, guys, I feel comfortable in saying that Texas has a deep wide receiver room, but difference makers or guys that can scare other teams are few and far between. There's a lot of guys on a football team. There's not many dudes. And I'm not saying that Ajay Hall necessarily is consistent enough to be a great player per se, but he does put a little fear in you. So if he does end up being off the team, it's an issue. We have some other questions that we've got to get into right now from this Q&A. We're going to do a weekly Q&A on recruiting and the team every Friday. Jerry, you went down to Florida this week. A lot of people are asking, both on Inside Texas and here on the message streams that we're getting, about what about the other kids in Florida outside of Peyton Kirkland and, yep, of course, Cedric Baxter. So that means Damon Wilson, the edge out of Venice, Florida, and Jordan Hall, the defensive tackle, defensive end type out of Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'll go run through it real quick. Monday went to Venice High for practice.
Looks like we're having some technical difficulties right now with Jerry. He's freezing up. His screen's freezing up a little bit. Matt, our producer, let me know when he's back on and has some clarity there. Ian, question for you as we talk about this stuff.
Met
today.
Damon Wilson for about, then headed up to Orlando. Look, Damon Wilson.
Is it cutting out on you, Matt? I'm asking our producer, Matt, if it's cutting in and out right now. Yeah, he's nodding yes. All right, we'll get back to Jerry in a second. Jerry, are you back now?
I don't think I'm back yet. Maybe I am. Am I back?
You're back.
Yeah, so I went to Venice High Monday. You know, look, Damon Wilson, as talented as he is, and that shows up on tape quickly. He's our number four player prospect in the country, 6'3", 234. Kind of gives that Will Anderson from Alabama vibe. I'm not saying he's going to be that good. A lot has to happen with these kids. They have to continue to develop. But he has that type of motor and that type of physicalness and that type of presence. I remember seeing Will at Under Armour camp prior to his senior year. It's kind of reminiscent of that. And again, I'm not predicting he's going to be a top five pick here. That stuff has to transpire, and these kids have to maximize their talent and keep working. But big time talent. I left there not questioning that we have him ranked as a five-star and actually thinking other people have him underrated. On his recruitment, I talked to Damon again briefly last night. That September 10th visit for the Alabama game is still on the table. It hasn't been locked in yet. He has an official visit locked in to Ohio State. That first game of the year against Notre Dame, that's September 3rd. Look, Alabama very much in it. Miami very much in it. He was at Miami last weekend in July. Georgia's in it. He's not sure if he's going to take an official visit back there, which was interesting to me. But those are the five schools. Those are the five finalists right now. I think after Texas gets him on campus, and I do think that happens, as long as Texas wants to keep pushing, I think they get him on campus, and then the recruitment becomes real. But one of the things I wasn't expecting, but then it made sense after Damon said it Monday, was that Tashard Choice is kind of leading up that recruitment. And that makes sense because he recruits the state of Florida, and he's the guy you want recruiting Damon Wilson, because he just landed center back.
Looks like we're Jerry's freezing up a little bit. Ian, getting a lot of questions right now. Troy O'Meary, it's not someone that we mentioned when we were talking about other guys in the wide receiver room, and I thought it was a good question. I went and watched practice. I felt like he's definitely further along than Jaden Alexis, but he's still not entirely back yet. I don't know that he scares me over the top, but I don't know that there's a more sure-handed receiver than him on the team.
I think he does have the potential to be that kind of guy. When Isaiah Nayor, when we watched his Wyoming film and he flashed quickly at Texas, the sense I had was, hey, this guy is basically what we thought O'Meary would be by now had he not blown out his knees. So I do think that O'Meary could become that, but he would definitely look like he was going to be that as a freshman, honestly. But could he replace that this year if called upon? That's, there's so many big problems there. One, he has to recover. Two, he has to translate health into the development of skills he needs to execute this offense with, route adjustments. Sark spoke at length about this at a recent presser, about guys need to know how to run crossing routes against zone, how to run crossing routes against man coverage, and be in the right places at the right times. So I think it's very possible that O'Meary could be a difference-making, over-the-top talent, but you don't want to count on that this year for sure.
Yeah, look, I'm thinking about it right now as we talk about this stuff and looking at the team. The announcement just minutes ago that Texas will have an official statement on Ajayi Hall later today, that coming from the University of Texas Sports Information Department. Joe Cook alerting us of that fact. I want to go to a couple of other things that people are asking here and really try to figure out what all we've got going on as far as, what we're trying to look at in this upcoming scrimmage. Okay. So there are a number of pieces to it. We've talked about Kelvin Banks already, not in this video, but in previous ones and on Inside Texas, and his appearance at left tackle. Question comes up in this chat, Ian, if Kelvin Banks is indeed the left tackle, what does that do with everybody else?
Well, I think, it just bumps Andre Carrick to the bench. I don't think they shuffle much else around. I think it's just a matter of, who's the guy there. There's not like a – I don't think Carrick takes another spot, for instance, on the line. I think he's out. He becomes, maybe the first tackle off the bench. And then in terms of the team and like the scheme, the more freshmen they play, especially as they're putting in like younger, powerful, more explosive players that haven't had as much time with high level skills like pass protections, the more you think that this team is going to focus on, quick game, running the ball, RPOs for the offensive line is not pass protecting on the throw, and then, probably max protection, play action shots, get Rashawn and the best blocking tight end on the field and get lots of help so that you buy time. So, I think in general, if the younger and more athletic they go on the offensive line, the more it becomes about simplicity and running the ball.
Gotcha. So people know Texas has a scrimmage set up for Tuesday. I think most of the people on here already know that, to be honest, a bunch of hardcore Texas fans. But the Longhorns have a scrimmage, on Saturday, but then it's an open practice / fan appreciation day on Tuesday. I'll be down in Austin for that, as will some other guys. We're going to be there pre-workout and pre-practice. We'll be telling you guys where we're going to be if you guys want to meet up beforehand. It looks like to me like we've got Jerry Hamilton back now. So I want to try to, if we can, I want to try to bring up. Oh, he just went off again. We'll get him back in a second. Long story short, we're going to have people in on with us and hanging out during that scenario or during that time. A couple other things I want to talk about and get your take on it. We are in a situation right now, Ian, where Texas is trying to figure out the quarterback role. A year ago, Hudson Card won the quarterback position coming from behind, coming from the two spot and beating out Casey Thompson in workouts, right? Now the roles are kind of reversed. Hudson Card has the one spot right now, kind of the incumbent based on everything else going on. And at the same time, Quinn Ewers is trying to overtake him, right? So how do you see maybe Hudson Card trying to figure that out overall and what it's related to at Texas right now?
You broke up a little bit just on that last part of the question.
So what is, if I'm thinking about it right now, okay, and Hudson Card was number two going into the scrimmages last year, okay? He overtook Casey Thompson, ended up being the starter out of the gate. This time, Hudson Card is taking the snap, primarily taking the first snaps, not necessarily the one snaps, but the first snaps with the first team. Now, Quinn Ewers is on his tail a little bit. If you're Hudson Card, what is the difference here for you? And is it just something that you think will eventually play out in these scrimmages coming up this Saturday and next Saturday?
I think maybe this scrimmage will be kind of a big one. From what I understand of Sark's offense, I think they're still in the initial install. I think it's a very long, like 2 week install just to get everything in because Sark has so much. So I get the sense from, you know, how he's handled some of the other positions that he kind of has the seniority-based pecking order and the initial install, scrimmage, figure out who the real guys are, and then from there focus on, you know, who the real talents are and playing to their strengths. So I tend to think that Card being a little bit ahead, like in the pecking order, is largely about seniority and familiarity with the offense. But they have this big scrimmage if they decide that Quinn Ewers is the best bet to win games this season. I think this is where, if he overtakes him, I think it would be, this is where it would happen.
Gotcha.
Last year, I think it was like maybe scrimmage two where Card overtook Thompson. This year, I would look at the scrimmage as being potentially very decisive at quarterback.
Gotcha. I'm asking this one from Helio Castillo. Do you think the defense will base out of a 2-4-5 or more of a three man with an overhang?
I think they're going to go back and forth.
Obviously switching topics here.
What's that?
Obviously switching topics here. I'm sorry.
I think they'll do both. They'll do it with a bigger end, like potentially Ojemo playing that jack end position. And so he might play out on the edge like a linebacker every now and then. And then he also might play inside like in a five technique or a four eye technique. And then definitely a overhang edge guy on the other side. So I think they'll probably go back and forth, but they will use three bigger bodies up front. That's definitely how Pete Kwiatkowski tended to play it at Washington when he didn't have an abundance of edge players. So that seemed to be where they were at coming out of spring with Ojemo as one of those, as a sort of swing guy that might be an end one play and it's sort of a semi-outside linebacker the next. If Baron Sorrell ends up winning that job or starting at some point in the season, I think it'll just be more of a true 2-4-5 because he's a little more of an edge guy. And obviously Ojemo is more of a pure defensive lineman. Hopefully that's clear.
Let me, we're going to go back to the quarterback spot real quick. Somebody said, Ewers threw too many INTs in week one practice. We did hear he threw some picks, but we also heard some other people threw picks too. So he's not solo in this, right? at that point, really, what is too many? You know, is it just a careless disregard for the ball? Because when I listened to Sark's press availability yesterday, Ian, he was talking a lot about taking care of the ball. That was one of his four or five fundamentals of what he's looking for. You know, speak to that, if you would. Like, what is too much in a practice setting, in your opinion?
I think it probably depends. I mean, certainly at a certain point, volume is scary. If you're throwing a high volume of picks, it's probably a bad sign. But I think the nature of the interceptions matters a great deal. You know, is he testing somebody who's fast like Jameson when he shouldn't? Is he just a little bit over aggressive because he's, you know, young, big armed gunslinger is used to beating up on high school defensive backs? Or is he throwing the ball into spots that he thinks are safe that are not because he doesn't understand the nature of the play or the nature of the defense? Does he throw picks when he's jittery? Is he getting spooked by the pass rush and making careless decisions? There's so many of those different factors that would go into it. You know, if he's just aggressively taking chances, then I would say that's probably not too bad of a sign. You can just reel him in a little bit. If he's like lost and you know, confused and feeling a little bit overwhelmed, that's less of a good sign. You need to either worry about it and question whether he's ready, or you need to see if he can get over the hump, or you just need to see if you can simplify things and make it easier for him, assuming that you rolled with Ewers.
Getting back to a breaking story overnight, really yesterday evening, Ajai Hall, the young man out of Valrico, Florida, by way of the University of Alabama, a transfer. It is the University of Texas announced today that they're going to have a statement today about Hall. I do not know what that statement is going to be, whether he's staying with the team, off the team, and we're going to try to find that out. But Joe Cook of Inside Texas reporting that he is going to be back. I wanted to say that because we've added about 250 people since we started this chat, and wanted to make sure I got that in there. Ian, one of the questions I had asked you prior to coming on today is really some of the top players you think that the Longhorns are going to be facing this year. I know Bryce Young, Heisman winner, Dallas Turner, the edge, along with Will Anderson, the other defensive end at Alabama. Those are going to top anybody's list. But who are some of the top players that Texas is going to face that people aren't necessarily thinking about right now?
That people aren't thinking about.
Yeah, so I know you like a defensive end out of Iowa State a bunch. Is an example.
Yeah, Will McDonald is the defensive end at Iowa State. He's their primary pass rusher. If you go back and watch the last 2 years of Texas versus Iowa State games, you'll see him because he had maybe a combined 4 sacks between the two of them. Really, maybe the last 3 games. I believe he had 2 sacks in 2019. I don't know how many he had in 2020. Probably a couple more. He had 2 last year. He's a problem. He's probably the best pure edge in the Big 12 right now. And I don't know why he came back for another year at Iowa State, but he did. So he's definitely a guy that's going to be a problem for Texas. A really good test of where they are with their offensive tackle position, whether they have Carrick out there, whether they have a freshman, you know, whatever they end up doing. The proof will be in the pudding in that contest.
I've got some breaking news here that just came in on my cell phone, and I hesitate to say this, but I'm going to go ahead and go with it because I think this is a one source story. Though it sounds to me like the University of Texas is deciding to stay with Ajai Hall. A source is telling me that Texas is likely to stay with Ajai Hall and he will remain on the team. Of course, there is no official comment quite yet, but the source that I'm getting right now is that Ajai Hall likely to stay with the Longhorns. I'll be posting more about that on Inside Texas as soon as this chat is over. I wanted to make sure people got that. I want to go to something else real quick. how is the kicking game looking? So, Thomas, this is a good question, and I know that Ian and I are both of the same place on this. We literally have only heard bits and pieces and have not seen them do much at this point. But the overriding fact is they're replacing the whole darn thing. I could talk more to special teams in general and what Sarkisian's talking about there. He started out the season started out the preseason going in four platoon units of 11 players each on each special teams unit. And then he's evaluating each of those weekly. He said yesterday that after his first scrimmage, he's going to take that four units down to three units and keep working those guys and evaluating them and putting some in with different units and mixing and matching. And then after the second scrimmage on August 20th, what he'll do is come up with his final two units. So kicking game is not just about the actual kicking, whether it's Will Stone or Bert Auburn, but it's about the entire are doing the field goal kicking and Isaac Pearson doing the punting. It's about all of that. It does appear from everything we have heard that Isaac Pearson, the young man from Australia, will be the punter. The kicking contest, from our understanding, is still ongoing.
Do you think, Bobby, that they might – I've heard that Will Stone has the bigger leg. Is that right?
Yes, that is. That's accurate.
Do you think it's possible they'll do the deal where maybe Bert gets the, you know, 35-yard kicks, and then if it's a longer kick, they bring in Stone? Or
I don't like that in general. Yeah. I don't like that where people do that because it doesn't breed consistency enough. You know, the kicker that's going out there needs to be the kicker. The kicker needs to know he's the one going out there, in my opinion. I understand what you're saying. I do think he'll handle kickoffs.
Yeah.
For sure. Almost for sure. Can't promise that because, you know, he hasn't been announced or what have you. But I think that the field goal kicker generally needs to be the field goal kicker, and he needs to be good 45 and in. Anything above that is always bonus to me. Is that not the rule of thumb that you've used throughout the years, Ian?
To the extent I've thought about field goal kickers, I'd say that sounds like a...
I think that's a great answer.
If you don't have something else imminent, I've got one more special teams question for you.
Yeah.
Mo Blackwell, Sark says he's one of the best, most natural tacklers on the team. He played a little, they called it dime linebacker last year. What that apparently means is the linebacker that plays on third down for coverage. If he cannot crack the two deep at safety, should they just consider redshirting him this year and trying to bulk him up into a linebacker, even though that would eliminate him from special teams duty? Or do they let him play special teams and you know, is it worth a year of his development? I believe he's like 203 pounds. If he moves to linebacker, you want that to be 220?
Here's my thing is – he has an opportunity to be such an enforcer, Ian, that sometimes that's a guy that you've got to have. You want to try him at all possible to get him in the game at safety because he's not going to be such an enforcer closer to the line of scrimmage because he's more likely to get eaten up by blocks. So what happens if he doesn't make the two deep at safety? I'm thinking that he's probably going to be in a grouping that gets some game time early to see if he takes to it once the lights come on. Yeah. So it looks like we have Jerry Hamilton back. Jerry, you better now? You back in the car. That was the key. You had to get in the car.
It's what it's like in transit sometimes, man.
I got you.
So where did we leave off with that? Is that where we left off?
Yes. Hey, I wanted to let you know, Jerry, one thing did happen. I got a source telling me that Ajay Hall likely to remain with the team.
Okay, there you go.
So we'll see if that is actually what happens, but that is what I'm hearing at this point. And so we'll have to see exactly what happens. I'm going to go back to you. We were talking about the Florida kids for you.
Yeah.
What are you hearing on? You talked a lot about Damon Wilson. What about Jordan Hall?
Yeah, first off, for those that didn't get the end of my Damon Wilson, I spoke with him briefly last night. September 10th official visit for the Alabama game, still not locked in, still being talked about. So that's where we're at with Damon Wilson in Texas. Again, Tashard Choice kind of leading up that recruitment, I think, is significant with Cedric Baxter being on board now and Peyton Kirkland, who Tashard Choice has had a hand in that one, recruiting Orlando for such a long time while at Georgia Tech and the southwest part of the state. Jordan Hall, you know, he wants to visit September 10th. I think Bo Davis is leading up that recruitment, obviously. Jordan, one of the top defensive linemen in the country. We have him number 27 overall in the On 300. And after watching him in person, I'm not sure he may not be better. He is a really talented kid. A great personality, just that long arms, big hands, quick first and second step. So he's kind of got all the stuff about him. But with Texas in him, look, Georgia is in a good position. I think Florida is in a decent position with him. I think Miami may be even a little better than Florida right now. And, you know, then it gets into the Ohio State official visit for Michigan week. Or for the Michigan game there at Thanksgiving. That one's locked in. He's got an official visit to LSU October 8th. I believe that's Tennessee game. So he's talking with Texas multiple times a week right now. They're building that relationship. I think Texas is really figuring out with Hall is, do they have a realistic shot at him? And I think once – I know that Texas fans say, well, just bring him in and then let that – well, you got to make sure you're not just spinning your wheels here. And so that's in a relationship-building standpoint right now. The official visit is being talked about September 10th, same weekend, Damon Wilson. And, again, that's the other thing the Texas staff – you know, when you get into these recruitments late with some of these top prospects, you have to make sure – and this is not just football. This has been mentioned in basketball. You just got to make sure these kids just don't want to take the visit. I mean, Texas is a great visit. That's an unbelievable game environment, Alabama game that weekend around Austin. So you got to make sure that this is a recruitment that is worth your time and your effort to lock into. And I think you'll see those that official visit set up with Jordan Hall once Texas gets to that point.
Jerry, I've got another guy that I want to ask you about that one of the guys talked about here on our chat. That's going on simultaneously to this, and that's Dylan Spencer. You know, what are your thoughts on him? He was one of those guys that Bo Davis identified early, and what position do you project him as?
Yeah, I think he's an interior guy all the way. You know, probably a three-tech guy long-term. I mean, he's going to be big now. He's 6'4 and a half. He's going to be 295, 300 pounds, maybe some 4i with him in the future too. I think that's kind of his fit, but – and look, he hasn't even scratched the surface physically. And I think that's one of the things I like about this 23 class. Honestly, Cedric Baxter and Derek Williams, who I saw yesterday afternoon, while they're top 30 prospects in the country, they haven't even scratched the surface physically. There's a lot of upside there. And when you look at guys in this class with upside, Dylan Spencer's one of those. And look, he started his high school career at West Orange. He moved to KD Taylor, so sophomore, then CE King last year. This will be the first time he's had real high school structure for more than a one-year period of time. And I think you're going to see a guy become a much better player as a senior. But I can say this, outside of what Texas thinks about Dylan Spencer, his name was brought up to me multiple times this spring when other college coaches went through. And he's a guy that, you know, I know LSU had interest in. Every school that's come through CE King during the spring showed interest in Dylan Spencer. So he's one of those guys, now that he's in the same environment, and he's in the weight, and he's in a strength and conditioning program there at CE King for a period of time. And those college coaches came through, and they really like where he could go as a prospect. So I think it's a steal early on. I think initially he committed to Texas over Houston, and so people were wondering, well, how good is he? Did Texas take him too early? But I think it's a pretty strong early evaluation by Bo Davis.
Jerry, you mentioned those guys that are high ceiling guys. That haven't been fully tapped. And you mentioned that not only is Cedric Baxter that way, but those guys down in Florida that you saw, you feel there. Derek Williams, who you saw yesterday, I know you feel like that. Any other of the, I think, 21 commitments now, or is it 22 commitments that Texas has, that you feel similarly to Spencer, the guys from Florida, and Derek Williams?
Yeah, yeah. First, I want to start with Derek Williams because I think I got cut off right before I was going to get into seeing him yesterday, and then I'll get to those guys with that upside because there are quite a few in the class. Look, the most interesting thing, and this is why you make the school visits, and Bobby knows this from his years doing this, is one thing I learned about Derek Williams that I did not know until yesterday is his father's between 6'5 and 6'6, and his mother's between 5'11 and 6 feet tall. Okay, he doesn't turn 18 until January. So right now, I went out there and watched Derek Williams as a 6'5", 180, 183-pound safety with long arms. But then after talking to the staff, you say, okay, how big can this kid get? Where can this kid go physically? And I can tell you that Ryan Antoine, the head coach at Westgate, told me yesterday, he said, I'm not going to be surprised if this kid's not 6'2", 6'3", 230 pounds one day. So you're talking about a total different prospect. And by the way, how physical is Derek Williams? They played against Trevante Citizen, Lake Charles Prep last season. Trevante Citizen's turning heads at Miami. He's a future NFL running back. Derek Williams knocked him out in the first quarter. Done. Citizen didn't come back in the game. Okay. That's a 6'2", 215, 220-pound senior Derek Williams is hitting. So he already hits like he's 230. The question is, how big is the kid going to get? But he's explosive in his movement. He's a twitched up kid. He's interesting because you talk to him, he's shy, he's reserved. But then when it's time to play football, he has a different voice out there with his teammates. And, man, is he physical on Friday nights. When those pads come on, he is a physical player. And I can tell you this, the Westgate staff, they had Kayshawn Butte a couple of years ago who we had in the Under Armour game when I was with ESPN. And they're like, NFL players, both these guys, no question in their mind. And Butte obviously will be drafted after this season pretty highly. And they put Derek Williams right there with him as a talent. Then any other upside guys in this class? You know, I think there's a lot on the offensive line in this class, which is interesting. You know, the 2022 offensive line class is going to be the class of guys. Kelvin Banks is going to start at left tackle. I mean, I've been saying it since he signed. I don't really care. He's going to start. Is it game one, two, three, or four? I don't care. He's going to start. And if he keeps mauling guys in practice, it may be game one. But then you have DJ Campbell who will play. Cam Williams, who's physically going to be ready to play. The 23 class, a Trevor Goosby guy, he'll take a year when he gets to Texas, and he's going to look so much different physically than he does now. He's a guy who's 6'6 and a third, you know, maybe 275 right now. He's going to pack on 20, 30 pounds in a year pretty easily. Jaden Chapman has physical upside. Andre Kojo is still 16 years old. He's a young kid whose body's going to be reshaped pretty quickly under Torrey Becton. So when you look at this 2023 class, the offensive line guys have a long way to go to reach their ceilings physically, where this 2022 class came in as already some really large human beings who are maybe farther ahead in that from that standpoint. So this class, Sadir Mitchell's got a ton of upside. As we're scrolling through the list, I mean, Sadir's a guy who was 355, 360 pounds a year ago. He's down in the around 330 range. And he's a guy who can continue to reshape his body, and he's already got all the tools and the skill set. But once he continues to get stronger and reshape that body, he's an early enrollee. Sed Baxter's an early enrollee. I mean, some of these guys with that upside, they're early enrollees where last year only one offensive lineman was an early enrollee, even though there are a lot of other guys. So some of these upside guys are going to get to Texas in January, and I think that's going to make a huge difference for those guys getting on the field quick.
There's two in a row or three in a row, really, that I think are upside guys. Spencer Shannon is he's an inline tight end type body build, plays a lot of flex at modern day. But I feel like he's got some. Billy Walton at South Oak Cliff is another one.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. Spencer Shannon's one. I should have brought that one up. I think that's a great call. Look, I mean, he's more of a baseball, basketball guy transitioning to football. How many times do we hear that nowadays? But he's a guy who's not even close physically to his ceiling, and he's already a kid who has physicality as a kid who's playing undersized, which I think is a very strong sign for his future. But then Billy Walton, seeing him at Malik Muhammad's commitment ceremony, 100% right. He's got 25, 30 pounds he can put on that frame and do it where it's proportioned well. A lot of upside there, and I'll tell you what, that's a kid who he's not ranked, and he's not going to be ranked as high as a lot of kids in this class. But he is a guy who has a little something to him. When you talk to him, you kind of get that impression. Physical, the step up in physical football play from high school to college isn't going to be an issue with him. It's just going to be about getting stronger.
Jerry, a couple of pass rush questions with some of these guys.
Yeah.
Can you see Derek Williams growing into a buck like Overshown might do?
You know, that's interesting, Ian. I mean, I can't rule that out. When I heard how big his parents are and some family members, and that he hasn't turned 18 yet, I mean, you know, is he going to grow into that? Because look, DeMarvion Overshown was a free safety in the Under Armour All-America game. And I mean, he hit like Steve Atwater at that age. Boy, I'll tell you. But he's a guy who's transitioned, and he's taller at the same age, obviously, than Derek Williams. But I think he was also a little bit of an older kid. So I think that's on the table for Derek Williams. If he hits a, you know, inch and a half growth spurt here in the next few months to a year, I think it's potential with him. But I'll tell you what, it's going to be hard for me to move him off of safety because he's so instinctive. He's so naturally such a playmaker back there. But his body may take it a different direction.
Then you mentioned you think Kelvin Banks, he's going to be the guy. Yeah. When you're looking at these tackles in high school, you know, they don't necessarily – some of them play in pass-heavy offenses, but some of them do not. How are you evaluating these guys for being a tackle? What do you look for?
Yeah, you know, Kelvin Banks was one of the easier ones for me. And I'll tell you this, and Kenny Harrison, former Texas fullback running back, is the head coach at Summer Creek. He was also the head coach or offensive coordinator when Jamal Charles came out of Port Arthur. So he's a guy I've watched for a long time, right? Kelvin came out ahead in pass pro because Kenny's such a good offensive coach, right? And I think most of the times that's where those guys struggle is in the pass pro early on. But for me, what I look at, Ian, obviously it starts with feet and ankle flexion. Offensive tackle, I mean, any athlete's got to have great feet. Don't get me wrong. They'd be a really high-level kid. He had the feet, he had the ankle flexion, he had the knee bend, he had some pop, and he could really uncoil on his hips on guys as he got older. He had enough arm length. He's an 80-plus wingspan guy. He's a 10-inch hand-plus guy. But to me, the big thing with these guys, you know, and I remember watching Laramie Tunzel at camp way back, is the reactive and the body quickness are so big for me when I look at these guys because – you know, and you sometimes you only see that in a camp setting without pads on because they're going against – it's like an AAU basketball setting. You're going against the guy lined up in a drill which is made for the defense to win. But if you react, your body reacts with quickness and your feet react with quickness, that tells a lot to me. You know, I remember Kelvin was always strong in that scenario in the camp setting. Tommy Brockermeyer was unbelievable in that setting before he started getting injuries that have really cost him and set him back. But that's what I really – those are the things I look for. And then, obviously, Ian, the biggest piece outside the skill set is when you talk to a guy, what's their mentality? I mean, you know, are those guys – is it a guy that you say, okay, one, yes, he can handle everything playing a left tackle position in college, and two – do you get that sense that physically he's going to answer the bell early on? And I can tell you with Kelvin Banks, he checked every box as a senior in high school for me. And would he be starting at Alabama? Probably not, but he's not at Alabama. He's at Texas, and there's an opportunity to start. But I'll say this, maybe he would be starting at Alabama because, you know, Evan Neal, even though he played guard, came in and started right away at Alabama on an Alabama offensive line littered with NFL prospects. That's kind of the things I look for at the tackle position. You know, there's a lot of traits and there's a lot of boxes that need to be checked.
I want to say this real quick. If you didn't see Kelvin Banks obliterate Vernon Broughton in that video for the hype video Texas put out yesterday, he looked like a grown man at however old, 18 or whatever he is. Hey, Jerry, I want to ask you one question about a guy I don't think gets enough TLC in the Texas community because I think he's a baller a little bit, and that's Jamel Johnson out of Arlington Seguin. First commitment of the entire recruiting class, has gone on and done some trips, got rave reviews, and stuck with the Longhorns. What are your thoughts on him?
You know, he's kind of the Jalen Gilboa of this class to me. And here's why I say that. And I'm not comparing him as players because they're a little different, but as prospects. You know, Gilboa was a guy that a lot of times last year throughout the recruiting process, people asked how fast is he. You know, his track times didn't necessarily back up some of the speed numbers that you hear about him, right? And So the reason I draw that comparison is Jamel Johnson, I think, plays faster than he's ever going to test. So I think you get Jamel into an Under Armour setting like last March, and he didn't put up great testing numbers, but I do think he plays. His play speed is better than his testing speed will ever be. So I kind of put him in there with Gilbo in that similarity from that standpoint of he could be a guy who plays above a ranking very easily just because all everything that goes into this business nowadays, you know, if you turn in a 4.71 on a laser, it's going to count against you. But you know what? If you play fast when you see the football in front of you, if you react fast with the pads on, then certainly you can outplay some of those athletic testing numbers. And that's kind of where I see Jamel. I think he's just a football player. I think Jalen is a football player. And I think that's the similarity between those two guys.
Ian, this one's going to go back to you. I'm going back and forth between recruiting and team stuff and opponent stuff. You mentioned Will McDonald at Iowa State as a guy that you think is an under-the-radar guy that Texas and the Big 12 in general need to be aware of because he's probably an elite pass rusher. Is there anybody else that you're thinking of that Texas needs to be aware of, kind of that's not necessarily on the, you know, every major watch list or what have you?
The accumulation of edge talent at Oklahoma State is kind of concerning for Texas. They had, you know, Brock Martin, I think, had 9 sacks last year. Trace Ford, they thought would be their best pass rusher, and he got hurt. He's back. The guy that replaced him, a freshman named Colin Oliver, had 10 sacks. And he looks like, I'm curious if Jerry has seen him. He looks like just a natural, freakish strength and explosiveness. This year, they're going to play him. It's what PK wants to do. They can play two of them at a time on either edge. So I think that's going to be a big problem for every team in the Big 12, but certainly for Texas, where, you know, you're talking about true freshmen trying to win a left tackle job in camp. They get Oklahoma State on the road before their bye week. So that's the 8th football game they'll have played in 8 Saturdays. That's a very, very concerning game. I'd be looking out for those players that Oklahoma State has on the edge. And then obviously Spencer Sanders too, four-year starter, very gifted physically. He can make a lot of throws that other guys can't make fast. He's played behind just terrible offensive lines for the last year. If they can fix that, then I think that those are definitely things for Texas fans to circle.
Hey, what was Colin Oliver in high school?
You know, he's not a guy I saw a ton of, honestly. I mean, I remember watching tape, explosive kid, but in person, that's not a kid I saw a lot of, honestly. So I'd be kind of spitballing on that one a little bit too much. But I'm not sure what I missed, okay, while I was in transit. But I continue to hear, by the way, it's not edge. Jordan Hudson is absolutely tearing it up at TCU. I'm talking tearing it up at TCU. So just for fans, Big 12 fans, guys that remember Jordan Hudson coming out of Garland last year, we had him as a 5-star with on 3. He had 2 touchdowns in each of the first 2 practices, and he was very impressive all summer. He's kind of what everybody that saw him thought he was going to be, apparently. He's a natural at wide receiver with as good a pair of mitts and ball skills naturally, as you'll see. But that's one of I think he's going to be – he could have an Xavier Worthy type of freshman year unless there's just so much around him at the receiver position at TCU who doesn't get a lot of opportunities. Quentin Johnson, Tay Barber, Savion Williams. I mean, TCU, from what I'm hearing, thinks they have 3 future NFL draft picks at wide receiver. Quentin Johnston, Jordan Hudson, and Savion Williams. And Chandler Morris has put on a lot of weight and doing a good job getting those kids the ball.
Hey, question for both of y'all, okay? Byron Murphy showed some, I thought, as a freshman, right? I think we all thought that he brought an energy that maybe was lacking on the interior. Y'all feel like Texas has to find a way to get him on the field as a starter, or is that necessarily what they need and they just need him to be heavy in the rotation?
How many positions can he play? You know, if he can play nose and 3 technique, then they can get him 60 snaps, 70 snaps if they want. If he's strictly a nose, then you start to run into trouble where if he's splitting time with Keandre Coburn, then maybe he doesn't get as many snaps as he deserves. So I think his positional flexibility is big there. And then and then whether or not they want to, you know, stick with Coburn or not.
Jerry, you have any specific thought on that?
Yeah, my thought with him as a prospect and just going into year two is he's such an energy, such a motor player. You know, we talked about Nathan O'Neill, who trains a lot of guys. We've had him on this show before. I asked Nathan about – Nathan worked with him a little bit in the spring, summer, and thought he's physically just continued to come a long ways, just continue to get stronger and learn to really – be more consistent with his hands, I think is going to be something people are going to see in year two with Byron Murphy. But Nathan O'Neill's a big fan of his, and I love Nathan's opinions because he works with these guys. He thought he was probably second most talented guy on that D-line. He said Alfred Collins had the most raw talent of any of the guys he worked with at Texas. But as far as now the number two guy, as far as talent, he thinks Byron Murphy just because of the motor and the toughness.
Jerry, got a question about recruiting, and this is about TJ Shanahan. What's our chances with TJ Shanahan? But I'm going to expand that for you. It's Texas. It's my understanding. It's not Texas is not really recruiting TJ Shanahan or any other offensive lineman at this time. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate right now, unless somebody peels out of the class, unless there's a number late in the class. Maybe somebody hits the portal during the season or they're expecting to after the season. I think Texas is good at five, especially the year after signing seven. I mean, look, that's a tough – people are like, well, just sign as many guys as you can. Yeah, it's not that easy. I mean, you signed seven guys last year. You got five committed this year. At some point, even a confident kid starts to question and starts to count your numbers. So I think five is the number right now. So TJ Shanahan, look – I'll say this. He had plenty of opportunities. Texas was recruiting him early on and recruiting him heavily, and he's down the street at Westlake, and he never got to campus. And I think that showed a lot, that he never got to campus. And now that obviously maybe some of those other situations that he was hopeful for aren't there, I think after Arch committed, I think he started reaching back out to Texas. But look, when the Peyton Kirkland possibility popped up, that made a lot of sense for Texas. I mean, Texas wants to recruit the state of Florida. Peyton Kirkland is that big human, that large human that Kyle Flood's looking for. And good friends with, friends with Cedric Baxter and some of those other guys. Tashard Choice already had been recruiting him at Georgia Tech. I think a lot of things fell in place with Peyton Kirkland in Texas. But, look, that's one thing to remember about the recruiting guys for the people that are watching this is, these kids have plenty of opportunities to come to campus and show a coaching staff that they're interested, sit down, have real conversations about recruiting and about football with these staffs. And if you choose not to, it's hard to blame a staff for going a different direction, especially when you live 8 miles away.
An update for those listening. Ajay Hall was arrested overnight, actually yesterday evening, by the University of Texas Police Department. His status with the team, an official announcement is supposed to be made by the university later today or by the football team later today. I am hearing from a source that Hall is expected to stay with the team, or whether, I don't know if they're going to suspend him for a while or what have you, but he's supposed to stay in school and still be on the team. We'll see if that source is accurate. He has not been wrong yet. So we'll see if that follows through as expected. Ian, we're looking forward to, we're about 3 weeks out from the first game, right? Louisiana Monroe comes to town. They're not very good, right? He just nods his head. He like, yes. Is there anything that they're decent at, or are they just patently just one of those teams that, you know, they got a tough life ahead of them?
Sounds like they have a tough life ahead. I think they lost their defensive coordinator. I believe they had Rich Rod for a single year, and he left and took the defensive coordinator with him. They applied a lot of pressure last year with the secondary that was hit by graduation. And, they will run the ball. They will run some spread option stuff from the shotgun. And that's always a good little barometer for your defense and whether guys understand where they're supposed to be or not. So I think that'll be interesting to watch for Texas fans, just to see, how these guys fit the run and whether they, they dive and you see the quarterback pull the ball around the edge for an easy free 15 yards, or whether they've got all that bottled up. But, you know, this should be a game that Texas is, you know, name the score, play the backups and all that.
The biggest problem with ULM, Bobby, is one of the things I look at with some of these group of five schools in these towns is there's too many current players that wear a Neville or West Monroe uniform that would start for them. That's their problem.
Holy cow!
Yeah, well,
I mean, from a talent standpoint, I mean, that's kind of, you know.
Well,
I,
when you're Zalance Hurd starts for a lot of people, though. All right, I mean, so there. Let's be clear about that. Hey, Jerry, and I'm going to get Matt, our producer, to cue up that Arch Manning play from yesterday as we kind of wind down here. Got a couple more questions I want to get in, but for the people that didn't catch the beginning of this broadcast, you came out pretty strong and said, look, people that downgrade or think Arch Manning is not legit as a prospect, they need their head examined, basically. Tell the folks really what you saw and your overall feeling coming out of that visit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, look, starting with Arch physically, he's a bigger, stronger guy right now, but he's retained his athleticism. Just watching him move around, he looks just like he did as a junior. And he's a bigger, stronger kid now. I mean, so one, that's the most difficult part about our job, ranking these kids, evaluating these kids, is are you going to retain athleticism as you get bigger and stronger? But Art certainly does. He's got really good feet. He's such a competitor. You know, more than what I saw, more than my opinion, which is one opinion, you know, Logan Kilgore, the new quarterback coach and offensive coordinator, he was on Butch Jones's staff last year. He played in the CFL. He set records at Middle Tennessee State as a quarterback. And after talking to him, I have a ton of respect for his opinion, right? It's like the first time I talked to Kevin Murray, I was like, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. It's just a different feel. And he went on and on. He said, you know, I asked him about Arch's arm strength. I said, I think it's because he has such a quick release, people question his arm strength. He said, he can make every throw. He said, that is not an issue. He said, the thing that he and David Morris at quarterback country have worked with Arch on is continuing to get stronger in his base and his core so he can maximize that arm strength, right? And he's putting all that together now headed into his senior year to where they've really worked on that base, that core. One of the things they worked on that deep ball yesterday, and we don't have the audio, is keeping that front foot on the ground. I think he's had – that's one of the things that Logan kept telling him on the deep balls, keep that front foot on the ground, keep that front foot on the ground. So that's something they've worked on from a technical standpoint. But I think Arch is a tremendous prospect. I think he's worthy of being number one. I think he's worthy of being a five-star. Is he in 4 years going to be the number one pick in the draft? Well, none of us know that. I mean, there's a lot that has to play out there, but you know, he's worthy of being a five-star prospect. There is no doubt in my mind. He can make all the throws. I think he sees the field really well. I think one of the things I like about him, just studying Arch, is, Bobby, I like quarterbacks that play under duress in high school. I think it helps him so much. Now, that's going to mean he's not going to have the big stats. He doesn't play at an Austin Westlake or a North Shore or have all this talent around him, have four or five Division I offensive linemen, have the guys on the outside that he can just throw the ball to a spot to. He doesn't play with those level guys at wide receiver on the offensive line. The 2025 lineman Brett Bordelon's very good now. Don't get that wrong. But as a whole in offensive line, they're going to be out talented most of the time. So the statistics may not be there for Arch like they are for some other quarterbacks. But he's having to play under duress. He's having to make real quarterback plays. He has to play with a time clock in high school, and I actually think that's going to benefit him when he goes to college. I think that puts him ahead of the game. And some people are like, well, he hasn't thrown with fast receivers. Well, that's not going to take a kid like this a lot of time. Okay. He sees the field. He's a naturally accurate quarterback. Logan Kilgore went on and on about that. Just the anticipation, that accuracy naturally, just how good of a natural passer he is. But I like that he plays under duress, Bobby. I think that helps him so much.
I've got to say this. Somebody told me the stat, and Ian, you can think about this stat. There have been 56 Super Bowls, right? I think that's the number. 34 of them have been won by just 12 quarterbacks. So two of those 12 are Mannings. So I just want everybody to understand that you can talk about all this other stuff not mattering, but if anybody were to ask you right now of all this group, who's most likely to win a Super Bowl of this these high school quarterbacks, and you don't think it's Arch Manning, I don't know really what to tell you. I think you're wrong is what I would tell you, I guess.
I noticed too in the video what you said, Jerry, about keeping his front foot on the ground. I immediately started seeing Peyton Manning highlights in my head, and I noticed that's exactly what he does. What is the benefit of that? Is that relate to accuracy on the deep ball?
That's accuracy on the deep ball, and that's part of your transition, you know, where you're not stuck on your backside, on your back foot, and balance, staying balanced and rhythm throughout the throw.
All right, I've got one more
card to get work on. Get Hudson Card in that drill.
Hold on a second. I've got one last recruiting question for Jerry. Is Damon Wilson a pipe dream?
Look, I'm a broken record. Of all these national guys that any program recruits, until they make it to campus, I don't want to say it's a pipe dream. It's a long shot. Look, it's only a pipe dream if we're telling you Texas is trying to recruit this guy and the kid's not answering the phone, okay? But there's conversations being had. Visit dates are being talked about. So it's not a pipe dream. But it is a long shot until a kid gets on campus. Damon Wilson's never been to Texas. Jordan Hall's never been to Texas. And that's why I'm like, look, here's where we're at with the recruitment. The conversations are happening. Official visit dates are being talked about. When that kid steps on campus, then my opinion starts to change. Because here's we talked about this on the show a few days ago, Bobby and I did. Here's the negative right now for Texas is Damon Wilson, Jordan Hall, these guys have been to Georgia more than once. They've been to Miami more than once. They've been to Alabama more than once, or Ohio State. They've been to all these places. So from that standpoint, you could look at it and say, man, you know, Texas is really behind on these guys. I don't know if they can make up the ground. Here's the total flip side of that argument, though, or that discussion. It's not argument, it's a discussion. Because those kids have been to all those schools multiple times, they already know everything. They've been there. They've asked the questions. They've been there in the summer. They've been there on a game day. They have all these experience at these universities. Then you have a chance to really wow a kid. He's never been on campus before. Say Damon Wilson visits the Alabama weekend. Deuce Robinson visits the Alabama weekend. The outcome of the game, Alabama's favored. They should win the game. But the city, the vibe, everything going on around the university, the program, Arch Manning's in town, all the commitments are in town, a lot of top 24s are in town. It's not just about the win or loss in that scenario. It's about what does the whole vibe of the town, the city, the university, the fan base. And it's going to be upbeat. It's going to be excited. They're going to be seeing Damon Wilson, Jordan Hall, Deuce Robinson, all these guys you're trying to recruit late. They're going to see freshmen on the field. They're going to see Kelvin Banks at left tackle. They're going to see a lot of these kids in the 2022 class playing, and the portal guys having an impact, an Isaiah Nayor. So these kids are going to come in, they're going to see a great vibe, and they're going to say, okay, the young guys are playing. I can go play there. I can go have an impact there. So that's the positive going with the negative is, you know, Texas has to work from behind, but when these kids have never been on campus, you have a chance to really wow them if you get them in the right weekend and get in the thick of the race.
Yeah, I tend to agree that it's not – recruiting is always nuanced, first of all. These kids, I'll never forget, Ahmad Brooks, who I've known since he was in high school, the former Texas player, broadcaster, he visited Texas for Route 66. If Texas fans know what that is, it was the end of the end for John McAvick. UCLA came to Texas and beat Texas 66-3. It was the worst defeat in Texas football history to that point. And so I'll never forget what Ahmad said subsequent to that. When Mack Brown arrived later that year, he went to Texas and said, you know what I think? I think I can stay close to home and play early. And so don't think that getting beat bad is always a negative. Obviously, you don't want it to happen. But, you know, you can never go so far. Ahmad, by the way, was committed to Colorado initially and then committed to Texas later. Jerry, thank you for your time. Ian Boyd, thank you for your time. both of us, are all of us, write for InsideTexas.com, which is the number one source on Longhorn football and recruiting. Jerry was all over the map this week in Florida and Louisiana seeing the top players. Justin Wells is on his way to Copper's Cove today to see the number one offensive lineman for 2024. So we're on the road trying to get information to you. Joe Cook is at every press conference and every media and practice availability. Eric Nalin behind the scenes along with Paul Wadlington. It is a work that we all love to do. So for Ian Boyd and Jerry Hamilton, we appreciate you guys. I appreciate you guys being here with me today. Also, a programming note, we will be doing these chats each and every week on Fridays at 11 o'clock. We like to do them before people try to go to lunch a lot of times on Fridays, get a little lunchtime break, and then we'll post it so you can see the recap as well. Another thing, I'm speaking with Paul Wadlington for a episode of On Texas Football that I'll post tomorrow morning. So for Jerry, Ian, thank you from Inside Texas and On Texas Football for watching. I'm Bobby Burton.